Álvaro Bautista, who's going to make it 9 out of 9, the best ever start to a World Championship season.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 598. Today we're going to be talking about the World Superbike round from Aragon, and joining me to talk about this is Jim McDowell. Jim, what's going on?
Not much, Derek. It's World Superbike time, which is kind of cool. Haven't got to do that yet. And a big thank you to you for sitting in for the MotoGP race with Skyler. Really appreciate that. Got tied up with some work/family thing and could not get time down with Skyler to do the show. So I appreciate you stepping in.
Yeah, not a problem. I'm watching the rounds anyway. So, wherever we can fill in, it's good. But I think this, kind of dividing the shows up a little bit is going to work out. I think that kind of helps all of us kind of keep track of stuff. I know Andy and Dave are doing a BSB preseason show, so I'm excited to listen to that. But I think that's working out for everyone a little bit better.
Yeah. I'm the superbike racing has been good, so I'm been watching those, and it's been pretty good. I have to admit, seemed better than it has been, and definitely got some interest in it. So I've been watching all those, having a good time with it, and we're just gonna chat it up.
And just real quick, a big thank you to all of our donators. Remember, if you go to motopodcast.com, you can hit the donate button on the left-hand side. Any little bit helps us get to the rounds, get some interviews, press passes, all those little things. So it really adds up. You can go to the website, or we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/motopod. And again, really, really helps us. So that's all about that, and I think we're just going to jump straight into the show with some listener feedback.
Yeah, there was a great listener feedback, so I'll read it here. It says, "Hi, Skyler and Derek. Greetings from England. New to your podcast and enjoying it. Keep up the good work. Just to clear something up, I thought that you were a little harsh on John McPhee's performance and crash in Moto3 at Argentina. True. The Scott did tag Lopez's rear tire, causing the crash, but the corner before Lopez cut across McPhee, causing contact and launching McPhee's front wheel about a foot into the air. The contact damaged McPhee's rear thumb brake, which wasn't there when he went in the next corner. Therefore, unable to slow enough, he tagged Lopez and both went down. True, his practice dominance meant that he should have meant that he qualified much higher up on the grid in the first place. Then he would have had a better track position. BBS begins soon. Can't wait. Great show. Keep it up. Cheers. Chris Snerden from Milton Keynes in England." So, Derek, you and Skyler were on that one. And what do you have to say in response to Mr. Chris?
It admittedly, was I harsh? Maybe. That's because I want to see John McPhee do well. He has the right package this year. He's been on the cusp for the past couple of years. But I honestly didn't know that information at the time, so thank you so much for sending that in. Obviously, when he's trying to stop and making that error in the braking zone, that all kind of makes sense, so that's fair, and thank you again for letting us know. I stand by that. I think, like you said in the email, I think John should have qualified higher up. He's fastest in those practice sessions in Argentina, and that's about it. What do you think, Jim?
Well, when I first watched it, I kind of thought that it was odd that McPhee was in as deep as he was. But I had no idea at the time when I watched the race that he had contact the previous corner with Lopez and that his thumb brake wasn't working. So I thought it was a bit of an odd crash for McPhee. I mean, I don't think, from my standpoint, I don't think he definitely doesn't ride that way. He's not that kind of a guy. He's a stand-up guy. I think everybody in the paddock respects him. I think he respects everybody else as well. So I just thought it was kind of an odd crash, and I thought maybe something had happened to the bike in some way, shape, or form. But, hey, it's easy when you know everything to say, hey, McPhee for running deep into that corner. And he did it there at that second to last corner, that kind of like is that big sweeping arc that tightens up as it goes in. That sucks everybody in there. And it could have been that, that's what McPhee did. He just got sucked in there. So it's great to know that. I really appreciate Chris writing in. letting us know the true story of what happened. But that crash never made sense to me when I saw it. So now we know.
Now we know. And if you want to send any feedback or emails to us, you can shoot us an email at motopod@motopodcast.com. You can reach out to any of us on social media. But if you do the email, it goes to all the hosts. So it's a great way to share your thoughts with us, which we always want to hear. So moving on, getting into some news, and kind of the main news topic that we have to talk about are rev limits in World Superbike, which me and Skylar have gone on and on and on about.
We will be going on and on about this forever, the rev limit thing. This is not going to die. So everybody get used to it. This is going to be the talk of the season, that's for sure.
Yeah. So today, the FIM and World Superbike came out with an update revised list to the rev limits for World Superbike. Ducati was hit with the 250 RPM drop, which is no surprise. I feel like we all knew it was coming. While Honda has been given a boost of 500 RPMs, which, I don't think any of us didn't see some advantage coming to Honda because they've been struggling a lot. They basically listed out all of the rev limits. So now the Ducati goes to 16,100 RPM, and I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference. What are your thoughts, Jim?
250 RPM off of that Ducati is not going to slow that thing down. For whatever reason, Bautista and that bike are one, and they're just simply whipping everybody with it. To me, I think the smarter play might have been to drop them 500 RPMs or drop them 250 RPM and give Kawasaki back 250 RPM, you know, because right now the new Kawasaki's, the 2019 bikes that Johnny Ray and Leon Haslam are on, they're at 14,600. I think they should have went to like 14,850, and the Ducati could have came down to say 1600 even. And I think it would be closer. I think that would have been more of a level playing field kind of move. But I look at this back like when Johnny Ray was riding a Honda, one of the best riders in the field on a bike that is not capable of actually winning races, which is sad. They're making progress with it. You can tell Johnny Ray is absolutely riding the wheels off that Kawasaki. He's actually riding really smart too, in my opinion. I mean, if you watch what Johnny does on the bike and his tactics during the race, he is definitely riding probably better than he probably has at any time in his career that I could really point to. But yeah, this rule with the rev limit stuff isn't going to work. I would rather have seen them do a weight thing, to be honest. I'd put 10 kilos on the bike somewhere, hang it on the bottom of the chassis or something, just to make it a little bit better. But I will take nothing away from Bautista and Ducati. They are absolutely wired and they are riding incredibly well. So
yeah, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think with their rider, you know, Bautista's just, you know, knocked it out of the park. You know, as we'll talk in a little bit, you know, Chaz made a big step forward this weekend. It seemed like we kind of saw that in Thailand, and then in this weekend he made a big step with that bike, so we know that bike can deliver. And then you have to give credit to Ducati and Gigi Dallini. You know, like they saw the rules, they saw, you know, what they were allowed to do. And yeah, their rev limit is just, you know, on the standard bike is just such a huge advantage. So those, you know, the rev limits that then they'll put in place, yeah, they don't have a long way to go. So yeah. And what about Honda getting that extra 500 RPM? You think that's gonna it's gonna help too much?
I hate to say it, but that the Honda is just long in the tooth. It's probably the same basic motor bike combination that Ray was riding back when he was on the Tenkata team. That bike is old and very old. And then, you know, we got teased by having Honda saying, well, we're going to build a new bike. And they came out with the new bike that like Nikki was on. And that was a, you know, it was like a Fireblade SP, you know, it was supposed to be some crazy sports production. It was, But it was still basically the same thing. They just kind of gave it some new body work and did a little bit with the engine, a little there, here and there. But I really would love to see Honda come out with a fire-breathing Ducati killer bike, which I think would be awesome. I mean, you know, I hope and I want them to do something super cool like they did back in the Lobo, is it, I want to say like the early 90s, and they came out with the CBR 900RR. That bike was crazy cool because it was no bigger than a 600 of the day, but it packed the 900 cc's inside of it. That bike had titanium everywhere on it. The bolts were all titanium, and it smoked everything because it was just a gnarly motorcycle. And it's like, you know, Honda can do that. You know that they've got the resources to do something like that. Like, can't you just build like a new Fireblade and call it, you know, I don't know, call it whatever you want to call it. Take a little MotoGP technology and throw at it and call it an RC 1000 or something. And, you know, they're just not there.
Yeah, I think Ducati has kind of pushed the envelope here and is really going to force those manufacturers to rethink the homologation special. And that's the whole thing with Honda and Ducati in the 90s and 2000s, right? With their World Superbike program. I think Ducati has pushed the envelope here, and we're going to see what the Japanese manufacturers end up doing. And I think the one interesting thing, and possibly maybe that can make it plausible with Honda, is that HRC is backing this effort in World Superbike now. So it's still early days. We're three rounds in, but even still, the Honda's been really, really struggling. So if they can't get this thing to work by the end of the season, who knows what HRC is going to go back and do, and what Honda's already working on. There's always rumors of the V4, you know, Honda Superbike happening. So who knows if that's going to come to fruition, if this World Superbike failure or success can change any of that. But yeah, I think because of Ducati and the kind of the uproar that it's caused, it's really going to push the European or the Japanese manufacturers to kind of rethink their strategy about this, which is great. It's exciting. You know, it's pushing the envelope. It's something new. So obviously for us fans and consumers, ultimately, it's really interesting. But yeah, that's about all I have to say about that. You have any other thoughts?
One other quick one. If anyone from Honda Marketing or Honda R&D is there, build an RC 1000, call it an SP model because it's a sport production, but that sport model gets a counter-rotating crankshaft in it. Now that would be cool.
We will see, Jim.
Yeah. Right. If I was Honda, that's what I would look to do. But
that's the tough thing is that the bike as it stands now is a fantastic road bike.
Yes.
You know, like it's the most, it's the bike that if you're like, I'm going to buy a Japanese super bike for the street every day, what bike do I want?
That bike.
The Honda
definitely
makes the most sense. It's like, it's the most user friendly. Which is great for consumers, but when the whole point of going racing is a marketing exercise, then it doesn't work out, you know?
No, doesn't. No. All right, let's move to the racing. So
let's,
because we beat that down.
yeah, we did, and we're gonna continue to beat it down. So apologies to the listeners, but that's kind of where we're at this season.
Yep.
So real quick, just a roundup of Super Pole. Bautista ended up on top. Surprise, surprise. He had it was about a half a second faster than second place, which actually went to Cortese, qualified on second, which is a fantastic effort from him. And Tom Sykes in third, which was a surprise to me, because they've been having, you know, they basically had a stock motor, but I guess they got a couple parts. They got like different fuel injectors and or throttle bodies and a different fairing to help with aerodynamics. So I guess that helped them a little bit down the back straight. But I mean, good enough for third position on the grid. So that's pretty good. Lowe's, Rinaldi, and Laverty. We had Reiterberger in seventh. Chaz qualified down in eighth, which was a bit of a shocker, but I think the most shocking thing was right after Jordi Torres in ninth was Jonathan Rea qualifying 10th on the grid.
Yeah, that was a shocker.
Still about a full second off of Bautista. So But at the same time, with the whole reverse grid from last year, I wasn't expecting too much drama from Ray starting back there. You know, like we saw him carve through the field last year once he had to start kind of in that middle of the grid. So, yeah, but not only did Ray struggle, but Haslam was also down in 12th. So that was interesting to see the Kawasaki kind of struggle for a one lap pace. But obviously, you know, Ray, he had strong pace, but nothing like we saw from the practice sessions from Bautista, and we ultimately end up seeing in the races.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing that surprised me was to see the Kawasaki's that far back. I don't think they were chasing one lap pace. I think they were chasing race setup the whole way. That's where I'm going to kind of go with it. I mean, a lot of those other guys, you know, I think Sykes, he's kind of the one lap wonder kind of guy. Always was good at that. True. So that didn't shock me a whole lot that he was there, but I agree. The Kawasaki's being where they were definitely a surprise.
Yeah. So that was Super Pole. Not too much to crazy to talk about. Or at least that's coming back to my memory at this time. And yeah, we can just kind of go right to race one.
Yeah. So we get into race one. Basically, light turns green, and Bautista just goes. He's gone.
Yeah. I think the Bautista, as we're calling it this year.
Yeah, okay, you're calling it the Bautista. I thought it was going to... He's okay. The Great Bautista. Yeah, he's like a magician, right? Disappears.
It was a Jorge Lorenzo classic.
It was a master class in it. He was there. He was gone. He just started putting people back by, what, half a second a lap? I mean, nobody was even remotely close to him at the time. And he was gone. I mean, even the race coverage didn't really care about where Bautista was. Every now and then you kind of went back to him to see where he was, but he was just absolutely riding a masterclass. He had, you know, like I said, he pulled a vintage Lorenzo, took the lead, just was gone, and nobody was going to touch him. But man, the race for second place, I thought, was fantastic for World Superbike.
Yeah, in race one, it was solid. In race two, you know, I'll skip ahead a little bit. It was probably the best superbike racing I've seen in a long time. Unfortunately, it was for second, but yeah, even in race one, it was good.
Oh yeah, I mean, as it goes through, and you had all the racing that was there, it was interesting to see, because you know Davies had kind of gotten ahead of Ray, and they kind of had a little ding dong there. And this is kind of where I was talking about Johnny Ray was riding really smart, because he went through the pack like a hot knife through butter. I think by lap two, he was already up to second place. I think he passed, seven or eight guys before they ever got to the rock wall at Aragon. I mean, he was just going anywhere. Like you said, we've seen this in reverse grids from last year. That's happened all the time. But, you know, they had that back and forth that was going on in there. And then you had, I think Lowe's was in there for a little bit too with it as well. And it was good racing. It was just back forth. No one really could get away there for a little bit. But you kind of surmise that when Ray sort of kind of let Davies go a little bit, I felt like, when he did that in the middle part of the race. And Ray just kind of sat back there. I think he was just sort of kind of taking the wait and see approach. I think he was trying to see, you know, what the tires were going to do. Again, just kind of rode within himself, rode a strategic race. And the last five to seven laps of that race was really fantastic racing. We swapped it back and forth between Ray and Lowe's and Davies. It went back forth in there. Ray was really, really strong in the first two sectors of that lap, where it's the tighter, twistier part that's got the elevation change, the long sweeping left-hander that heads into the area where the rock wall is. And you know, Ray would run it in there, and you knew Ray was running hard because he ran wide a couple of times in there, and Davies would do the cut back under, then Ray would be back again right on him, and he'd outbreak him going into sort of that reverse kind of corkscrew that leads onto the big back straightaway. But then Davies would power back by again, and then Ray, and then here would come Lowe's was in there, and at the time Laverty was actually in there, and Laverty was looking really, really good, and he kind of snuck onto that lead pack in the end. I think he was kind of there with them, and at the very end there, they were going through that section right through the rock wall, Like, what was that? The last lap or next to last lap. I can't remember which way it was. And he got in there a little too hot. And I think he touched the back of Ray's bike with the side of Laverty's got the Ducati, right, as well, I think. Mm-hmm. And he got in there a little tight. And you could kind of tell maybe Laverty is not used to the idea of having wings on a motorcycle, because he just ripped the wing off the side of the bike and went down.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, he was riding with one wing for most of the race.
Oh, really? I thought that only came off at the that corner. So, really? Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. So that was one part of it, and then, but yeah, he was super close to Lowe's. He was closing down on Ray and Davies, and yeah, one lap, two laps from the end, he makes that mistake in that chicane right before the
They turn the back. They call that turn 15, I think. Maybe something like that, but yeah, that was sad.
But yeah, it was unfortunate, because you kind of saw the Ducatis all coming to fruition, with the exception of Rinaldi. But you know, Davies, you know, got his flow back. Bautista obviously way out in front, and then to see Laverty on kind of, you know, a very different bike, not semi-factory, not anything, like truly a privateer effort with totally different suspension, still making that bike work, really, really close to the podium, and he just, you know, kind of bends it down the road. But you can't fault him for it, you know, he was trying.
Oh no, he was definitely trying. I'd have gone for
super
it.
Super exciting to see.
I'd have gone for it. Like I said, the racing for second, third, fourth was amazing racing. That's what superbike racing has been in years past. That's the kind of racing, but you only saw that like at the very, very front. And I was, you know, it was enthralling. It was edge of your seat kind of thing. You didn't know. You kind of surmised that Johnny Ray was eventually going to get Chaz. And, you know, Johnny Ray played it really super smart when he did it. He took what was the strength of the Kawasaki, the great handling, the ability to actually sort of turn on the side of the tire, because I think they get into they go through that reverse corkscrew and you have that very long left-handed curve that's there. Ray made an opening and just kind of barged his way through on Davies there, and literally rode the wheels off of that motorcycle until he got to the backstretch. And he had pulled just enough of a gap that Davies could not pull it back in and pull the trigger at the end of the lap to get by him. And Johnny Ray was able to hang on and finish second. You know, Laverty had, of course, had went down in there, and so that allowed you know, Davies to finish third. So that was how race one actually ended, with Lowe's then being fourth. Sykes on the BMW doing really well to finish fifth. Vandermark was sixth. Cortese seventh. And then what was that? Rex? I can't get this one. Help me out here, Derek.
Rezgatti.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. My Italian sucks. But Haslam was back in ninth. He couldn't get anywhere. He kind of qualified there, and he stayed there, which surprised me to no end. So, you know, totally interesting. That was a shocker.
Yeah, not sure why Haslam had such issues. You know, top rack was doing well in eighth. You know, not too far away from him, and Torres right behind Haslam. So, you know, that kind of groups all the Kawasaki's again, except for Ray.
Which shows you his Ray's ability. I mean, yeah,
for sure. Yeah,
but you look at Davies on the Ducati, and you see where Bautista is on the Ducati, and you go, well, look at how, you know, it's the same thing. Bautista is very good, right? And I think, but Chaz is still fighting an injury or two, isn't he? I mean, he's not fully healed yet.
At this point, it sounds like he's 100% more or less.
Oh, really?
I mean, about as 100% as a motorcycle racer can be. In Aragon, he's had an incredible amount of success here at Aragon. Ducati had a two-day test, you know, a few weeks before. And from what I understand, they were testing with the 250 RPM drop already in place, because
they knew it was coming.
So, and just to clarify for our listeners, that they did not have the 250 RPM drop. That's going to be from Assen this weekend, moving onwards. But they wanted to test there just to have that in the bank, so they had some understanding of what that was going to be. So Ducati did have a lot of advantages here, and so did Chaz. So if he wasn't on the podium at all here, it would have been surprising. So he got off to a good start with that podium finish. And yeah, that was Saturday wrapped up.
Yep.
Definitely. Then we moved on to the Super Pole race, which I gotta say, as much as I don't like it, I love the racing. I love the whole, the ethos of the Super Pole race.
Yeah, that, yeah, it's like a dash for cash and a dirt track event or something. It's just lay it on the line and go for it. It's 10 laps. Let's just, let's rock and roll.
What I don't
tire
like
doesn't
is
matter.
That, yeah.
You know, there's just, no strategy. You go fast. That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah, which what I don't like is that apparently now this race now counts as a total in like total race wins of all time in the series. Whereas when they started the season, they were going to kind of make it its own separate category, its own separate win.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know. How that kind of adds up again to the spectacle and to stats and all that stuff. You know, me coming from like a love of baseball where stats are like everything, and then you kind of come to here and then it's like, oh yeah, we'll just group this half race as a full race win, and that'll stand in the, it doesn't sit well with me. But that aside, as pure racing, it's fantastic. And this race was no exception. Obviously, you know, as these first couple of rounds have been, Bautista just kind of got out front, and that was that. But again, that battle for second, third, fourth, that podium fight between Ray, Lowe's, and Davies, another great race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It was, you know, I didn't see this race, but I, you know, kind of got the recap of it here, and it, you know, it was definitely cool. You know, the thing of it is, Bautista keeps his win streak going, and you know, the racing's, like you said, I'm not real happy that it's a half the points are added for a race win to your championship total for that. I'd much rather it be like do kind of like a Formula One, old school Formula One. How's this? You got like 10, 6, 9, 3, 2, 1 kind of a point thing. That way, you know, if you could win in a short distance, like, you know, like Ray could, you're going to take 4 points off of the guy who finishes second, right? So that would be really cool. But that's not how they're doing it. But, that, you know, that's their decision about what they wanted to do. And so that's how it is. But
yeah. But, you know, kind of going down the list of riders, again, Ray getting that second place, Lowe's back on the podium. Again, he was in that fight in the first race, and he continues that from Thailand. So he's had 3 podiums in the past 2 rounds. Davies very close to getting on that podium, but didn't quite manage it. Sykes in fifth. Again, a great debut from, or not debut, but, you know, great round from the BMW, who's still, you know, not fully up to it. And I'm just kind of looking at the speed trap numbers here, and you look at Sykes, his top speed was 305.9 kilometers an hour, and then you have Bautista at 319.5. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge disparity. You have Bautista hitting 200 miles an hour, and Sykes is, you know, he's still back there. And again, these first couple rounds, you know, we have Australia, which is its own thing. We have Thailand with 3 huge straights. We have Aragon with 1 massive straight. You know, that really ends up adding up a bunch.
Oh yeah.
So this weekend is going to be fantastic with Assen to see how a bike with such good, seemingly good chassis characteristics in that top speed advantage shouldn't be as much of a hindrance as it will has been in the past couple of rounds. So going to be, again, exciting to see. But with that said, even on a place where it should hinder them, he finished in fifth. He was 10 seconds behind, but you look at Laverty finishing in sixth, also 10 seconds behind. So Haslam did slightly better in this race, but again, still kind of with the rest of the Kawasaki's with Jordi Torres in eighth. But yes, yeah, so that was race, the Super Pole race, and race 2 or race 3,
however you want to look at it,
whatever number race you want to call it.
2A, I don't know. Go for
it. Yeah. This, in all honesty, this is like the highlight of the weekend for me. That battle for second place in this race 2 was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was another Jorge Lorenzo-esque Bautista, if you will.
Yeah.
The longest you saw him was about turn two. But that second place was fantastic again. Fantastic racing again.
Yeah, if you haven't watched this and you're listening to the podcast, go and watch this race because it's probably the best superbike race that I can remember in the past. In the Johnny Ray era, we'll call it.
You know? I agree.
The Kawasaki Johnny Ray era. It's like you see Ray's going at it, Davies going at it. He was really hoping for that second place, but Johnny Ray he got it and has continued his second place win streak, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping Bautista in relative sight. So that was fantastic, and we really saw Haslam step it up. Whether it be. It's interesting to see that progression from Haslam because I hadn't really thought about that until we kind of looked at the stat sheets before the show and just kind of seeing how much he struggled, at least from day one, and then the progress he made ending up finishing fourth. Because again, he was really in that fight as well. What surprised me here was to see, again, over full race distance, the Yamahas. You had Lowe's in fifth. Vandermark was down in eighth. Cortese and Melandri 10th and 11th. So they struggled a bunch, as did the BMWs. Reiterberger had a weird crash at the beginning, if I remember correctly. And then Sykes, again, just had a tough race. So, interesting to see kind of how the rest of the field spread out compared to race one the day before. But that battle for second, again, I can't even, I have no other superlatives for it. It was fantastic.
The part that I love was Haslam kind of joined the pack there and actually got past Johnny Ray, and Haslam was second for a while. And it was Davies went back by, his back, forth. It was some really hard, very clean racing. And that was what was really exciting about it, was these guys were using every inch of the track. They were definitely not riding dirty or anything like that, but they were definitely putting themselves in the position where it was their line, their corner, and, you know, hey, you got your wheel in front of the other guy, that's your turn. But again, like you said, I mean, this race, I mean, I know I'll probably date myself here, but if you go back to 2002 Kalami, when you had Bayless, Edwards, and Haga, all on the podium there, that was one of the best superbike races I think I'd personally had ever seen. And this reminded me a lot of that same thing. Hard, aggressive riding, elbows out. You had a little, and it was fantastic. I didn't really like the fact that Haslam didn't get to the podium. I wish that he could have. But, you know, there's not a whole lot that he could do with the horsepower of the Ducati, because I think Ray can ride at another level that Haslam has not yet figured out how to do with the Kawasaki. You have to have a lot of faith, a lot of trust in the front tire and how it's going to work and the feel that you're going to get back off of that. And he may not have that figured out with that bike at this time. I mean, I know Haslam rode a Kawasaki in BSB last year, correct? In BSB runs Pirelli as well, but I don't think maybe the compounds or constructions may be the same between BSB and World Superbike, and I'm sure that the spec of bike is definitely different between what Haslam was riding and then versus now. So I think he can find it. I think he's very close. Whatever they did between you race one and race two was a massive improvement for him, and he found something. It's one of those things where it's either just a click of rebound, or it's a click of compression, or it's just a minute change in where the rear wheel is in the swing arm, you know, in that relationship back to the swing arm pivot. It's just something minor, and whatever they, you know, it was great. It was great to see that he actually was there.
Yeah, exactly. So, race two, fantastic. The finishing order was Bautista, Ray, Davies on the podium, Haslam in fourth, Lowe's, Laverty, Torres, Vandermark, Rinaldi, and Cortese rounding out the top 10 with Melandri just behind him. I guess I'll finish the rest of this because there's only 15 finishers anyway. Sykes in 12th, Kemier in 13th, Kiyonari in 14th, and Reiterberger in 15th, again, kind of with a crash on start finish straight. I think he ended up tagging Jonathan Rea, and that was kind of a weird one. But so that's race two. Looking forward to Aston this week. This is a round that a lot of people, ever since Australia, has kind of tagged as will the Ducati or won't the Ducati, you know?
Right.
And hopefully we can get that race two battle for the lead.
I think we will.
Because that, I really hope so. I think there's a good chance of it. But there's also a good chance of Bautista again taking off. You know, he knows the track. He's feeling good with the bike. So
I
hope that's not the case.
I agree.
But it's possible.
I just feel like at Assen, it's a rider's track. And I think it's whoever has the largest attachments. And I do not think that Johnny Rea is not going to want to beat Bautista and stop the bleeding. And I think this is his best, you know, so far this year, this is his best chance to do that.
Yeah.
I think he's motivated. I think he's dedicated to it. And I think that track he goes well at. And I am hoping that it's going to be a knockdown drag out for the lead. Even if it's just a mano, Johnny Rea versus Bautista, 5 seconds up the road, I don't care. I just want to see those two go at it tooth and nail.
The key at Aston, I think, could be if Johnny can just get in front of Bautista, you know, like he was doing in Thailand for the first portion of those races. He was able to get in front of him, kind of hold him up a little bit, but on the straights in Thailand, Johnny had no answer. But if he could do that at Aston, there's no real super long straight. There's that back section that's super fast, but it's not really a straight.
No, yeah.
So
twisty, definitely. You're changing, you're on the left side, you're on the right side, you're back forth. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be the key, but I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be this Aston, just the track layout and everything, has the potential for it to be the best race so far of the season. And again, if we can get that second place fight for first place there, it'd be great. But yeah, that's pretty much World Superbike, unless you have any other thoughts, Jim.
No, I just think
we move on.
The only thing I noticed is that it's interesting is that Melandri's high-speed wobble has followed him to the Yamaha. So it must be something in how he sets up that bike that causes that wiggle. It's better than it was, but I mean, if you watch like Phillip Island, it was wiggling massively. Thailand, it had a little less wiggle, but you watch it at Aragon and it was a little less, but it's still there. So it followed him from a Ducati to the Yamaha. So it has to be either the rake or the trail, or the way that he wants to find fuel in that bike causes that instability at high speed, which is just interesting to me.
Yeah, it definitely has to be some way he sets up the bike. I don't know if he puts more weight on the rear or what. There was some bit of information that I was listening to where they said that on the Ducati, once Ohlins gave him an upgrade, he was able to kind of fix that. And I assume to either put more weight on the front or, again, to find geometry that worked better for him with a different Ohlins setup. But he didn't have that upgrade on the Yamaha. So I think he was waiting for that again. I forget where I heard that, but that was the information. But yeah, between him weighing nothing and how he sets up the bike, that's what we're seeing.
Yeah,
which
definitely,
again, is nuts. It's so crazy, especially in Phillip Island last year. I remember seeing that, and I'm just, holy jeez.
Yeah, it's not a fun feeling by any stretch of imagination. But that's all I got for World Superbike. So we can move to World Super Sport if you'd like.
Yep. World Super Sport, we had the main characters up there. We had Kerr Casulo. We had Gradinger, who was on pole, who kind of surprised a lot of people up there. But, you know, he's been one of those top 3-4 Yamahas with Kluzel, who seemed to struggle a little bit this weekend. But Krumenacker, he qualified a little bit further back. I don't have the qualifying sheet up right now. But, you know, it was Gradinger and Kerr Casulo on the front row. They got away, and then Krumenacker kind of had to come through the field a bit. But mid-race, Rafael De Rosa on the MV making it work. He just ended up gaining time, and he eventually hit the front, and it looked like maybe MV was going to win. That wasn't the case. Krumenacher was the one that came through the field and just had... This is going to be Krumenacher's year. He has everything going for him, and yeah, he really was able to run a very calculated race and end up getting the win. But yeah, that performance on the MV, I felt really bad, but I was like, it's gonna have a mechanical issue. Like, there's no way.
I thought the same thing. I did. At one point, man, those guys were like three, almost four wide going into the final turn that was there.
Yeah.
And then and then DeRosa kind of snuck through and was actually leading. And it was like, holy crap, he went from fourth to first in one turn because these guys were just going every which
yeah.
way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple times coming down that front straight where they were like, three or four. Right alongside each other, which was pretty crazy, especially on that turn one is like a 90 degree turn, so it's not like anyone has anywhere to go. So that was that performance by DeRosa. I thought was great, and it was great that the MV actually finished.
Yep, held together. He looked good. The MV looked really good in the twisty bits. That seemed to be like where he was really making the time up. Or at least to my eye, that's where I saw it. So I'm looking forward to like Assen seeing maybe he can do something there. So I'm hoping that, it'll be maybe not a second place. Maybe he can get it on top of the box, which would be an absolutely fabulous result.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't remember the last time MV won. I don't know if they won with PJ. I don't think they did.
I don't think they've won podiums.
It's been a while. There's been a lot of second places, yeah.
Yep, it just seems like they're due.
I hope so, but yeah, we'll see about that. Kerkasulo and Gradinger had a tough race. I think they showed a lot of pace in practice and in qualifying. Obviously, I think Kerkasulo is pretty bummed that he wasn't on the top step. He's been looking for wins. He's been looking to get up there. And again, another podium, solid result, great result for the team, first and third, but I think he expected more, and Gradinger has to be happy with his performance.
I would think but so, yeah. He was leading for a long stretch. At the beginning, yeah. It was just him and Kerkasulo that were out yeah. front, and they had a little bit of a gap.
Yeah, he's on a good bike. He's has a great team, the Callio Racing team that won with Cortese last year. So that was nice to kind of see his potential there. The R6 is obviously the bike to be on. I'm just looking at the results here in the top.
Yeah, the top six bikes. Yeah.
Five of the top six were R6s, and the only other one was the MV. Then you have the Kawasaki's, 8th and 9th. You have two Hondas in 11th and 12th, and then another... Yamaha in 10th, but yeah, that's obviously the bike to be on. But someone who was on an R6 but had a very difficult weekend was Jules Cluzel, yes. The man who's kind of dominated the first couple rounds. So
he did. I don't know where it was. I don't know if it was a setup thing or whatnot. But one interesting thing with Cluzel, I don't know if you knew this, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but he changed his gear with his right foot.
Interesting.
Yep. He cannot pivot his left ankle enough to change gears. So his gear shift is on the right side of the motorcycle. Just,
I feel now that you bring it up, I feel like I did hear that at some point.
Yeah, I noticed it because old school dirt tracker. I was like, wait a minute, man, he's shifting with his right foot. I'm like, oh sweet, he put it on that side because it's a predominantly left-handed turn circuit.
And then yeah.
I kind of did a little research on that. Like, oh no, it's because his ankle's been pinned and he can't shift with his left. But yeah,
how many top level racers have done that? The only one that comes to mind is Hutchie, obviously.
Yeah, Hutchie, yeah.
From Isle of Man.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any others offhand, but that that's a difficult thing to go from left side to right side. I know like a lot of the old school Norton in Triumphs have mm-hmm. that.
Actually, I think I think in, at least in the US, like all the English bikes were definitely right hand shift, and I know that it was like either 75 or 76 in the US they made it mandatory that all gear change was on the left hand side and brakes were on the right hand side. So you can mm-hmm. have like up to like a 74 model motorcycle and it will be that way, except for I think, because I had an old Harley that was a 74 and it was right hand shift, and I think the Japanese had kind of started with the left hand shift kind of thing, and they kind of gotten a pretty strong toehold in the 70s into the motorcycle market here in the US, and then they changed the law. But yeah, old bikes, definitely they had it. It was right side shift, and you think about it, it was English motorcycles, and that's kind of, that fits with them riding on the opposite side of the road, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
You know, kind of fits
just
like that.
They just got to do everything backwards, man.
I guess, yeah. But yeah, other than Hutchie, I mean, Cluzel's the only guy I can think of that I could go back in time and think about. But yeah, it was, yeah. I just, one of those things was just interesting, you know, that he there. But he struggled. I you don't know if he just missed the setup, couldn't make the tires work, you know, maybe a, you know, maybe for some reason it just, maybe he doesn't click at Aragon, you know, some people can or can't deal with some tracks, and for whatever reason you fight and struggle with it for a long time. Like I could never figure out how to go fast at Mid-Ohio, just never could. So it was a bogey track for me.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what his record is at Aragon, to see if it's a bit of a bogey track for him. But but at the same time, you know, fifth, not his best day, not the end of the world, but I think super sport is so close, you know, your bad days have to be on the podium still, you know?
Oh yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
So, my pick here is Krumenacker. I think he's at the age where he has the maturity and the know-how and the racecraft, especially, mm-hmm. To get it done. And if he can, his biggest thing last year was consistency. So if he can just have it on the podium every weekend, first, second, third, whichever, and just and keep taking those points, that's going to be key. And then we have, you know, Lucas Mias down in seventh. Me and Skylar kind of joked about this the other show, but man, what was he thinking going on the Kawasaki? You know, the R6 has just been so strong to give up that position. You know, he's with a good name brand team in Pedicini, but oof, he's struggling.
Yeah, don't know what's going on there. I can't add anything to that one to help anybody out on that. I just don't know, it just isn't working, that's for sure.
Anyway, so that was that. Just to quickly run through the results: Krumenacker, De Rosa, Caracasulo, Gradinger, Cluzel, Parlabi, Mias, Akubo, and Kyle Smith on a Kawasaki in ninth, Isaac Vinales in 10th. And then rounding out the points, we had Sebastian, Danilo, Fellini, Cresson, and Maria Herrera getting the last point in 15th place. So, a really good super sport race. I think it should have been highlighted a little bit more, but I think the racing in the second race of the World Superbike class just kind of overshadowed it a bit this week. But solid race. And just to touch briefly on Super Sport 300, we're kind of running a little bit low on time here, and there's so many riders in Super Sport 300. It was just a chaotic race, as they are. Unfortunately, Maria Herrera, Anna Carrasco, crashed out on her first race back defending the world title. So that's unfortunate for her. But yeah, there's 39 qualifiers, I think, for this race. The grid is so big, they have to split qualifying and practice sessions up in Group A and Group B. It's nuts. Like, yeah. So how many riders qualified for this? We had 27 finishers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 crashers. So yeah, 36 qualifiers for this race. Insane. But yeah, we had Manuel Gonzalez on the Kawasaki 400. I have the name pulled up here for second place, and I can't even pronounce it. Cancelis?
Do you
have it up there?
Yeah, it looks like it's a Hugo de Cancelis.
That sounds right.
I think Cancelis. I did not see any of
this. We'll work on these pronunciations. I apologize to everyone for having to listen to us fumble through these. Easier one was finishing out the podium, Scott DeRue. Back on the Kawasaki, back in World Super Sport 300 this year. I think he has a good shot of it. If he can just, his major thing was consistency. I think that's what we saw last year and why Anna Carrasco won the title. Just winning two races, I believe, was just her sheer consistency. So DeRue's making a good charge at it. But yeah, I thought, it was nice to not, even though this field, just looking down it, is dominated by the Ninja 400s now, it's nice to see a slightly more level playing field with the R3 and the KTM 390 being more competitive. I'm not too sure of exactly how they ended up balancing it out to do so. So I, unless you know off the top of your head, Jim,
I have no idea on this one. How
more than happy to do some more research into that and report back after the next round next weekend, just to give a little bit more clarity. But it's, because that's the tricky thing, because the manufacturers aren't having a consistent displacement for this category. It's called World Supersport 300, but all of the bikes on the grid are not 300s. You have the Ninja 400, you have the RC 390, you have the Yamaha R3, which is a 321cc bike. It's everywhere. So, and I think there's even the Honda 500 is homologated for this class, which...
That makes sense, considering crazy. Honda can't do anything in a World Superbike. Might as well just give them 500 cc's in a 300 cc class. That'll help.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have their 300 cc bike, but it's that... They just skipped that and went to their 500, and they're like, you need this. We'll give it to you. But no one's even running that, so I think that speaks volumes. But yeah, we'll do some more research for you here on Motopod, try to give you a clear and concise breakdown of the 300 class. I know me and Jim aren't spending too much time on it, but again, if you like good racing, if you like chaotic racing, if you like Moto 3, you're going to want to watch the World Supersport 300 Championship. It's just so fun to watch. And there's, with this being the second or third year now, I think it's the third year, right?
For World Supersport 300?
Yeah.
I was thinking two. I was thinking this is the second year, but...
No, it's the third year. Yeah. With it being the third year, there's some names that are coming back. There's some names that we know, like DeRue and Carrasco. So there's a little bit more context this year. We know the teams to look for. We know the bikes to look for. Yeah, fantastic championship. We'll have some more information for you next time. And yeah, other than that, is there anything else you want to touch on, Jim, before we sign off to these fine folks listening?
The only thing I want to mention is that I will be at COTA for the MotoGP weekend in Texas. If anybody wants to stop by and say hi, just hit me on my Twitter, at MotoRGV.
Are you leaving tomorrow for COTA?
No, I'm not leaving until I leave very, very early on Friday morning. So I'm not going to get there till like after the lunch break on Friday and whatnot. Yeah, it just didn't work out to leave late Thursday for us. So we had to go to a early Friday morning.
I got to say, I'm pretty jealous. I made the decision a couple weeks ago to not go to COTA. Just because, got other stuff happening. But I'm seeing everyone post their photos from it already. All the riders posting photos being in Austin. And I'm just like, damn it. I should have just pulled the trigger and gone. So I'm unfortunately not going to be there. I'm not sure if any of the other hosts will be down there. Do you know if Skylar's gone?
Skylar's not going. I know that. I'm not sure about Lynn. It depends on his work, and he may be here in the States. But I haven't heard anything definite from anyone going except for me. So,
well, enjoy.
I will. It's gonna be fun.
A great time. As it's really difficult not to have a good time at Austin.
It is. Yeah.
It's a great city. Fantastic food.
Great atmosphere. I'll give
it. It's just truly one of the best times. So I'm pretty jealous to not go. I will say it doesn't produce the best racing.
But that's because of one guy.
I think You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I think that it not producing the best racing makes it kind of the best GP to go to, because you're not like, oh, what's happening in the race, and you're not seeing every corner. It's like, all right, I know who's going to win. Like, I'm just going to go watch the practices, be at the racetrack, see all the motorcycle stuff from the US, see MotoGP bikes on track. Like, it's kind of the best race to go to because it's not the best race. You know what I mean?
I see your point. I do. Yeah. I mean, I enjoy walking through the vendor row. I like looking at all the bikes. I think it's kind of cool. KTM brings their Moto2 bikes and sets them there. They bring their MotoGP bikes, sets it there. They bring their motocrossers and set them there. You know, you could see like Dungey's bike or Cooper Webb's and stuff like that. I think it's all cool. Honda brings cars. They bring bikes, ATVs. You can look at all that stuff. It's a great atmosphere. Everybody's having a good time. Everybody's friendly. You know, food's great at the track,
and
too,
every year it's just gotten better and better. I think I ended up going the second year that I was in COTA. And even then it was still kind of, you know, not fully fleshed out, but compared to last year, you know, last year's just so much going on. So it's great for the fans. Moto America will be there for the Superbike class is going to be running. So if you are going to COTA, be sure to stick around for that, because there's some really good racing this year. Speaking of Moto America, we'll have a show out for you in the next, probably after COTA, and me and either Skyler or maybe we'll try to get Scott on the horn and kind of do a roundup of the first two rounds as they were in Road Atlanta last weekend. Scott actually got us some great interviews as well, so we'll try to get those out to you in a timely fashion. But after COTA, they got a 3 week break or so before VIR, so that might be a good time for us to do a kind of roundup of the first two rounds for you.
Sounds good.
Anyway, so to kind of wrap up the show for you, feel free to reach out to us, like we said at the beginning of the show, for listener feedback. You can reach us at motopodcast.com if you want to email us. You can get us on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, at @moto_pod. You can find me on social media, at @MotoDerekC. Jim, where can the fine people find you?
Twitter and Instagram, at @MotoRGV.
Fantastic. People can hit Skylar up, Andrew, Dave Neal. We're all on there, so definitely... engage with us and we will engage with you back. Go say hi to Jim if you're at COTA, and be on the lookout for some BSB shows from Dave and Andy. And that's pretty much it from myself and Jim. Until next time, we will see you later.